Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
Welcome back to part two of my big interview with the mighty Michael Laudrup. An elegant man, a wonderful footballer, and it turned out in part one, a superb storyteller. He thinks in completed paragraphs. He's interested in getting his ideas about the beauty of football across. He's brilliant on Pasquale Bruno and how he was going to kill him. Not Michael to Pasquale, the other way around. At any rate, I hope you enjoyed the first part of Michael's interview where he talked about his technique and made comparisons with other players that inspired him. If you haven't heard it, it's still there waiting for you, calling out to you. It needs you as much as you need it. Nevertheless, this is part two. And here, Michael talks about his experience as a coach, including a League Cup win with Swansea that you'll hear he values very highly. If it happens to be that Swansea's your team, then you're not going to be disappointed. Michael loves you just as much as you love him. I hope you're enjoying Michael Laudrup joining us in the big interview. If you are, please tell people. It was a special experience for me, given how highly I rate him. I see him intermittently. We've worked together intermittently. But to be able to talk football for that length of time with somebody who I genuinely admire, a player of real brilliance, who's willing to share all of this effectively with you. Listen, not all footballers can talk about their skills like he can, so I better let Michael get on with it. This is part two of the big interview between Graham Hunter and Michael Laudrup. The relief when you're in the final, that feeling, Wembley's to come. Was
yeah. I think that was incredible for the first time, a club at Wembley. But then after that, I said, it's incredible. What we have done? We've beaten Chelsea in Tulek. We won at Anfield. And now we play a final where everyone who's not a Swansea fan will hope that Bradford is winning, because everybody will be with a small team, which is logical. So I was a little concerned about that. I said, oh, now we've done all this, and then in the final we are huge favorites to win. We have to win, otherwise people will say, what, how is that possible?
The spoiler for everybody who doesn't remember, you did, and well.
Yes.
Manito.
Yeah.
Quite a common scoreline in your life.
Five-nil, yeah.
In any of the fives, for Barca against Madrid, for Madrid against Barca, for Swansea, were you ever one of those? Did you ever do
Never,
that?
Never. I never.
Do you like that?
Even no, I don't like it. And I don't like it because I don't want to be arrogant now, but I've not been at that side. But I have lost 5-0, I think. And I don't like it because it's humiliating to lose 5-0 of 6-0 or 6-1 or something like that. And I don't like it. Football, I like to win, but humiliate, it's like when you make, through the
nutmeg.
Legs.
A tunnel.
I always used it like the croqueta. to go past my opponent, never to make him look...
To humiliate him.
To humiliate, never, never. So I did not like the 5-0 for what it was. 2-1 for me would be the same. But of course, after the first one in Barcelona, 5-0, then 12 months later with Real Madrid, I could understand that the people, they did not ever think that it would be 5-0, but they said, now we have a chance because we have a good team. We have, Barcelona is not that strong at the moment. They have problems. We have to beat them. And then we won 5-0. And the only thing that I, a little funny, sweet story was when some years later, I think it was 10 years later, I think in 2008, it was when I was a manager for Getafe. I was in the airport and a man is coming with his son. I think he was more or less 10 years old. That means that he was born more or less when I left football. And his father said, oh, can I take a picture with my son? He said, of course you can. And he said to his son, oh, this person, he was a very good football player. And then the son is looking at his dad and he said, think of that. 5-0, 5-0, you know. That was the only thing he said, that 5-0, 5-0. And we were laughing all that because... but this is again, you talk about before, you said the Danes, you said with Allan Simonsen maybe. This is also a thing sometimes, I think it's different from the north, maybe from Scandinavia to the south of Europe or South America, that not only footballers, but people in general, that has been something done, something very great. Sometimes we should remember a little more those who made the difference. Also 20, 30, 40 years ago, I've known people played in Italy. They're not here anymore, but they played in Italy in the 60s. And even when they were 75 years old, coming back to Italy, people, how are you? And all that. Even younger persons, you know. And that, I think it's great. And I repeat, not only for footballers or for sports persons in general, also for others that remember people who've been doing a difference at their moment, even if it was 50 years ago. I think sometimes we are not so good at that in Scandinavia. We live we have to live in the present, but sometimes living in the present is not forgetting the past. I think that's also important.
So showing a curiosity for what went before you, so that you can learn.
Yeah, but no, and also I'm thinking about respect. Now because I'm explaining this with the father, with his son. I know there's YouTube and everybody can go in, but sometimes it's also from grandfather to son or from grandfather to his grandchild, stories about him or her or that or them. So they can also learn because we... Otherwise, I mean, it's important. It's... we have to live in the present, but even for youngsters who likes football now, I think it's important that they also hear a little, how was Maradona? I mean, when they hear us talk about Maradona or Pelé or Zico, or Pelé is a little low for me, but I haven't seen him, but Zico and a lot of players from the 70s and that. Of course, if you're 25 years old or 30 years old, you don't know. You haven't seen them because you said it in the beginning of the interview. I mean, we did not in the 70s, even in the beginning of the 80s, we did not see a lot of football on the telly. Today, we can see three games every day, almost 6 or 7 days a week. It's different. At that time, it was only finals and World Cups and European Championship, nothing else. Yeah. And on Saturdays, one game from England. Yeah, one game.
You're preaching my language because my father, who I just spent some time with, who sadly at the moment has Alzheimer's and dementia. So in a 5-minute spell, we can have the same conversation five times.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I take him back to his childhood, or for example, if I begin to talk about football, or if we still watch football together, he's the same man as I grew up with. And he taught me two guys maybe you have never heard of, but when I was growing up, he talked to me about a guy called John White. He was a Scottish player, played for Spurs, won the double with Spurs in the 60s, was golfing in London in the 60s and was hit by lightning and killed. Yeah. But he was even before the lightning incident, he was kind of called the ghost, because he could arrive in positions where nobody knew how he got there. And maybe, my dad said, this could have been one of the great, he was Dalglish-like, but he died young, etc. And he told me about a guy called Charlie Cook, a winger who played with Chelsea and won the Cup Winners' Cup with Chelsea, but played for Aberdeen. And these two guys, I never saw them play, but my dad infused me with a love of the story and oral storytelling, which is part of the reason we're here. Oral storytelling and passing description on, not just YouTube, is big for me, for respect, for discovering, for opening people's minds. We often hope from these interviews people go away and going, I want to find out about that guy. Maybe somebody says here, I heard the name Elkjær, I'm going to find out about, etc. So that's exactly. Beautiful. But with the guy,
the problem with the players back or people back from the 60s or 70s, that the internet was not there. So it will be easier for nowadays and in 20 and in 30 years, because the technology will just go on and on and on. So of course we are limited a little when we're talking about people
that's why
the power of words is so important, because it's not to say, oh, we have to argue who was the best golfer or football player or whatever it is. No, this is not the question. It's about, but you have to, this guy, he's very good, but there was this one and that one and this one, and then it's a word. So you also, the from generation to generation, you hear about people who was something special 30, 40, 50 years ago, to learn. I think that's important. And again, I repeat, it's not only about football. We could take a lot of things here, Toga. It's about everything, because in every field you have people who had made a difference at that time.
Show them respect and try to learn.
Exactly, and try to learn. That's the two things. Huh?
I wasn't going to do this, but before we close, and we're not going to, but you'd said we could talk about Johan for an hour or a day, and if you gave me the permission, I would. So one day, please, are you listening?
Yeah.
Please, one day. I wasn't necessarily going to mention this, but you mentioned his name. You're one of the people that had the fortune or misfortune to play against Maradona. I have here Wednesday, 15th March, 1989. Napoli beat Juve 3-0. You're playing in a team with Pasquale Bruno, who I think ended up playing at Heart of Midlothian in Scotland.
I need you say Pasquale Bruno and say Maradona in the same sentence. I need to tell this one.
Paint the picture, because
I need to paint the picture.
Quite different.
We're playing at Sao Paulo Stadium in Napoli, and 21 players waiting to go from the tunnel up. We're missing one, which obviously is Diego. He was the captain. He's coming, small guy. And we come up, 80,000 people, and Pasquale Bruno was playing with me in Juventus, and he was going to mark Maradona. He was very nervous, I remember. No, the game starts, I think we played six or seven minutes. At that time, Maradona received the ball in the middle of the pitch. I was just about 8-10 meters from him. Pasquale Bruno is coming. And his left foot is on top of the ball, and Bruno is coming in with two feet tackle. In the last second, he just rolls the ball between the legs of Pasquale Bruno, and he gets around him. He's getting touched, so there's a free kick. At that time, I'm standing there and say, Bruno, come on, come on. I'm looking down at the boots of Diego, and he was still having them, I don't know what to...
Unlaced.
Unlaced, yeah.
He was playing with the laces open.
Open. You're not long, but they were short, but they were open. And we played 7 minutes. In a Serie A game with 80,000 people. And I said, Diego, hey, you shoot. Okay. And I was saying...
Details.
Small detail, incredible. Well, it was just... it's not to talk about, because I don't want to go into that debate. Who was the best player in the world all time? Messi, him, or third one? Because, again, we're living in different periods of time, and I think it's not about It's not a competition, because football, we can talk about football for days, and you can have your opinion, I can have mine. I think we have to listen, and I think we have to just be happy that we have had the possibility to see these players. And I'm very grateful that I've been playing in the same time as Maradona, and I'm very also grateful that I've seen the last 10 years Messi and Cristiano play and compete against each other with Real Madrid and Barcelona on top of the world. I think it's great, but so I don't want to go into that, because then you have people older than me that say no, Pelé was something else, and then you have olders from, if you talk to people who are 80 years old in Madrid, and say no, Di Stefano.
Di Stefano
could play everything on the pitch.
Alex Ferguson says
so. Why is it's not a competition? No. This one. No. We have to find who is the best. No. We're talking about four players who have given so much to so many, and then we can go to the next level. And I'm always happy when I come to, always in Denmark, or I go to Spain, and somebody just come to me, and he's maybe my age or a little older, and the only thing he says is give my hand and say thank you. I think that's incredible. It's 23 years since I left football. It's 25 years since I left Spain. You know, so it's for me just to attention. Thank you. Just thank you. Nothing else. Not can I have five autographs? Just thank you.
Well, this is part of what,
and this is
what this we were doing today.
This is great. I think
I'm glad you said that,
because there are so many players, so many people, also in other sports, have done so much. Sometimes, I think we live in a time right now with everything has to be the best or the worst, the cheapest or the most expensive, the tallest or the smallest. Why can't things not just be great?
Appreciate beauty.
Why should you always make a competition that if I've just seen a great goal, is this the best goal ever? No, why? It's a great goal. Why make it a competition that this has to be the greatest of all time? This is I don't understand this. If this, I think it's a little the moment this time we're living in, the period that we have to find something. If it's good or bad, it has to be the best ever or the worst ever.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, don't accuse me of having a deaf ear, but again, our sponsors, 365, ask us not who's the greatest rival you've ever faced, because that would be a stupid question, but...
Right, it would be wrong right now.
Right now. But okay, let me introduce the theme. What I was lucky to interview one time, Johan, in his house, when UEFA was celebrating 50 years of European football, and I said to him, who's your toughest rival? And Bertie Vogts. He said, Bertie, I would do this and that. I'd be gone. And you know how funny. He'd be like, yes. And he's there again at my...
He told me once, he said that we were talking about the World Cup 74, where they played fantastic all the games. And he started so well because they got the penalty.
Germany touched the ball.
But he said that with Bertie Vogts, the problem was he was a small guy. So you could never... If it's a big guy... I can feel him. But Betty Fox, you cannot feel him. And, but you know he's somewhere there, but you don't know where. And that was, oh, he's a... But it's the same now. You don't want to ask me who's been the toughest
guy. Did you
ever
have a pesado, somebody where the night before the game you got... And maybe, I don't know if you had to play against Pasquale, but I mean...
I played...
Somebody where you go, oh, God, it's this guy again.
Now I have to tell another story. That what is happening when you get older, you remember stories. But I played Pasquale Bruno.
Okay.
I play Juventus, he's playing Torino. You know, that's a big game also. More for Torino than for Juve, but a big game. And I was standing there waiting, looking down at the ball, and suddenly I hear someone telling, I will break your leg. I don't know who is it. And what? Hey, I will break your leg. And I'm looking up, and he's watching me. And I say, me? What have I done to you? Hey, I will... Because he thought, talking like that, well, the game starts, and I play a good game, and I get a one-on-one with him more than once, and, well, I think I had the... I won in the end the confrontation. And after, he comes over to say, Michael, thank you for saying... Excuse me. Why did you say that stupid thing? He says, no, you know, they told me if I could scare you with those, maybe you wouldn't play so well, but no, I didn't mean anything about it. But that was just... That was Pasquale Bruno.
Ciao, Pasquale. Ciao.
Ciao.
As we wind down, listen, I said we had brilliant questions. I didn't mention everybody. Robert Ryan, thank you. We've talked about Johan Cruyff. Richard Pine, I remember one time you were kind enough to let me come out to speak to you in Qatar.
Yeah.
And even then you were saying, I think after this job, I'm going to take a little break and work out if I want to coach again. Richard just asks straight, Michael was fabulous as a manager and a player. Would he ever consider managing England again? And Richard said it would be a dream to see him at Watford at some point. I love the style of football his teams play. Have you got a clear idea on the life of your coaching?
I said when now it's 3 years ago, mm-hmm. I said I would take a leave, undefined leave. And every time I've received an offer in this period, I put on... the positive, negative part, and still I reached the conclusion that my life, I mean, I'm very pleased with my life, you know. In these last 3-4 years, I had 3 grandchildren. I'm living in Denmark. They are all living in Denmark as well. And they're just moments that they will not come back. And I think, well... A lot of people then tell me, yeah, but Michael, you're still young, you're only 57, yeah, you can stop when you... Yeah, but you never know. And then I continue, why? 2 more years? And then after 2 years, it will be exactly the same. You will ask, just 2 more years, and 2 more years, 2 more years. I remember, and I when people ask me this, I always come back to the conversation I had some years ago. I was in Cannes with my wife, and we had to play... a charity game for Luis Fernandez. And Luis Aragonés, Atletico coach and Spanish coach who won the European Championship 2008, was there. And we were talking. At that time, I think he was 71. And I'm talking, said, can I ask a thing? How many years have you been a coach? And I said, well, I've been for almost 37 years. I stopped as a player 34. I had 6 months, and then I started. And said, during those 37 years, what has been your largest period of absence? Where you? And he was thinking again, and he said, I think 3 or 4 months. So you've gone from one job, stop, 4 months, 3 months, then back. He said, what's the future? I think at that time he had been a national team coach for some years, and said, well, maybe one more job as a national team coach, I don't know where, and then I will stop, be with my family, with my wife, with children, grandchildren, and all that. Yeah, that's fine. 1.5 year later, I read in the papers, Luis Aragonés died, 72, 73 years old, I don't remember. And I was just thinking, you have to be careful not to think that, okay, I will work until here And then from here, I will live that kind of another kind of life.
Yeah.
Because you never know when your time is up. It can be we're 90, but you never know. And I always remember that conversation I had with him and his wife and my wife at the time. And then you have to live all the kinds of life you want to. And I mean, since I was 18, I went to Italy when I was 19. I came back when I was 34. I had 2 years living in Denmark, and then I became a coach. First in Denmark, second coach national team, Brøndby, Spain, and all that. And now we're here. And I think so. You have to be very, very, very careful not always to push forward and say, well, I can do a little more because at that age, I will do something else.
Yeah.
Because you never know what will happen at that age.
But Luis also was an addict in a good way. And he was addicted to the industry, to the smell of the football, to the smell of the grass. He was an addict also to the good and bad with the players, the good and bad.
But
you're not like that. You're not an addict.
No, but I admit that when you're in football, when you're out, you're missing something. If you ask me now, you're missing something. Yes, of course I am. I'm missing daily contact with the players to see a team develop, together with a lot of players, with staff, with club, press, whatever, to make a competitive team, to reach, to win a trophy like with Swansea or with Brøndby or something, which is special. But again, there's also a price that you are there, you're thinking football the whole time. We're sitting here now. In 8 hours, I have to commentate on a Champions League game. But I'm sitting here. And after, I will go and eat some lunch. I will come back. I will prepare for the game. I will do the game. And then after, I will go home. I don't have a... I'm not sitting here thinking from 9 o'clock in this morning to 9 o'clock in the evening, oof, and what I'm doing if I'm Barca coach, with Lewandowski and with this one, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then tomorrow I have to think about the next game. What happens tonight? Yes, already tomorrow I have to think about the next game in the weekend. It's game after game after game. This is a tough world. It's very exciting, but it's also very tough. And if you look at some coaches, some more than others, you can see when they come in day one and after five. Oh, and after 10 years, it's not just words. Then you say, okay, 5 years as a manager in football, it's like 15 in another.
Without being rude, we saw that difference in Pep in 3 years.
Yeah.
In
so
3 years.
It's exciting. It gives you a lot, but it also takes a lot.
I'm going to close with a present to your friend, also a socio, Ian Arnott, a fanatic about Mallorca. And Ian says, hola amigos, my question for Michael is regarding his time in Mallorca. Michael is instrumental in saving the club from relegation. And I've always wondered if he believed he really could have made a mark there if the club hadn't been excluded from the Europa League thanks to their financial situation. And if Serra Ferrer hadn't done what he did with Eric Larson. Ian, he's a Scottish guy, and he's been a supporter of this forever. He really loves Mallorca.
It was a very difficult moment, you know, a difficult moment, no money at all. I remember that the squad, I mean, we had of the 24 players in the squad, I think there was 12 who never played 1 minute in the first division, and a lot of players, the best players, they had to leave because get some money in. It was a very difficult moment. You can also see that in these years, Mallorca, we saved Mallorca that year, and it was incredible because I think that it has never been so expensive to be saved. I think we were 44 points. I mean, we were just 1 point of relegating because it was incredible. But if you see that since then, Mallorca, I think they also even one or two seasons they were down in the second B, which is the third. Category in Spain. Now they are back at the highest level in La Liga, and I'm very pleased with that. And I hope, because it's important also for the island to have a football team there.
My last one, Michael, is you're an open-minded, intelligent man who thinks about world things. You've been a businessman since you stopped being a player.
I wonder what the ball, a football, means to you. And I don't know if you're religious, but you were made to be a footballer. Let's say the gift had come and you'd have been a brilliant businessman, maybe, or a rock star, or an actor. Would you change? Because you made me think of this, because you said, I'm at this age, I'm happy with my life. There are very few people say that out loud. Mm. There are very few people who are happy with their life at 57 and content with what they've achieved. You are, and you've said it. Yeah. If you could have been touched by a wand and changed for one of those other things, or was the ball just about the best friend that you could have been born
with? Yes, because it's maybe if you talk to a musician they will say the same as I'm saying now. It starts, football is like a circle. You start when you are young, at least when I was six, 7 years old, to play with your friends somewhere where you could, on the street or where it was. There was no internet, there was no game, esports, all that did not exist at that time. So when you had time, you go out. Then if you're good, you get to a higher level. If you're very good, you get as a professional, and you play as a professional. Maybe you can go on national team. You can win, even maybe win trophies. You get old, you have to stop. You get back, you continue playing. It's like the circle who closes. Maybe a musician will say the same. Yeah, I started on my guitar when I was 7, and suddenly I was very good at it. I came into a band, we get famous, we got money, but you don't do that anymore. It's a little the same, but I'm very happy. And if I have to close this interview with football or with players, I have to say I'm a little concerned for the players for the future. I see that there's a lot of things in football, but it's more and more games. We're talking in the beginning of this interview that in the 70s, even in the start 80s, there was not a lot of football in television. I mean, some special games, national team, World Cups, European Championships, some finals, FA Cup finals, or maybe one weekly game. Now you see game every day, but also the number of games for players, and even the best players. Yes, they earn a lot of money, but every time we put more games on,
we're squeezing,
and I think, and it's too much. You cannot play if you have to play every 3 days. I know they are physically well prepared, better of course than 20 or 30 years ago, but even so, there's a limit, and I think we are reaching that limit now very, very fast. Maybe we already passed the line now. We have to remember one thing: fans, money, sponsors, presidents, journalists, it's all a part of football, but the most important thing are the players. Because if you don't have players, the rest doesn't mean anything. You need to have the players, and we cannot just squeeze and squeeze and squeeze. We have to think about the players.
A voice of sanity, because we're still close, even though you've opened a big subject. It makes me unhappy that we see players playing through more injuries than ever before. Yeah. They don't get time to relax, because the creativity needs, you have to switch off.
And then don't come with that and say, they earn a lot of money, they have to be prepared. No, that has nothing to do, because the body has a limit. And you cannot.
And the mind.
You cannot. I mean, I read the other day here some South American players, they came from the qualification games with the national team. They arrive here after I don't know how many hours with jet lag and everything. They can just sleep a few hours. They go out and play a game. You can do that one time or two times. You cannot continuously yet. Now we're only in the beginning of the season, but you reach a certain point, you get injuries, and you get more and more injuries and longer and longer. And
there's not a direct.
So then you need more players. Then you say, now we have more games, so there will be more money. Yeah, but you have also to have more players. What would be the next? We have, instead of 24 players in the squad, we have to have 42, like in American football or something. I don't know.
Guys, you played against, like today, Batistuta finds it hard to walk because of his ankles. Van Basten's knee ruined him. There's no direct correlation between, let's say, stress, because we don't quite know what happened to Christian Eriksen to cause him to be near death.
But when players were having their ankles and knees smashed, we changed the rules to say protect them.
Yeah.
Now
that's a good thing. I think the players are more offensive players are more protected on the pitch right now.
But it's time to do the equivalent for protecting maybe their mental well-being, their physical well-being, rather than say, dance for us again. Now dance for us again. Now dance for us again. Treat them like human beings. Stop squeezing. Yeah. Stop asking for a World Cup every 2 years. Stop saying more games. Yeah. It's time to somebody listened.
Now we hear something new about more World Cups, more European Championship, more games in the Champions League, more games everywhere. And I mean, we're squeezing and squeezing and we see a lot, too many, I think, injuries and injuries because of that.
Elegantly said, Michael. I'm going to make you unhappy again, like I did at the beginning, because I have to pass praise. Off camera, I started by saying we do this because we're romantics. We still find football inspirational, beautiful. It's people, the stories. Get rid of the polemic. Get rid of the headlines. Listen to the people. Watch them play. And remember the good times. Mm. You've done all of that today. It was generous. It was fun. And you've made me a happy man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true. Graham Hunter. And Backpage. Our music is by Beer Jacket. Who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.